Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema here with Benjamin Solak. We are midway through covering the NFC Conference, going division by division. Go through every
single draft. You always say NFC Conference, which is National Football Conference Conference. You said AFC Conference earlier.
Yeah, but like I'd say the abbreviations and then the word conference so people know what I'm talking about, because I feel like you just say the word NFC and like people don't connotate it with the conference, actually. I mean, I could just stop saying it if that'll make
no,
you...
No, I mean, I agree. That's why we call it...
If you feel better, I can stop saying it.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, that's why we call it the Locked On
NFL
League
Draft Podcast. You just
want to
intro the podcast? You can intro the podcast.
I don't want to intro the podcast. I just want to criticize
you. Of course you don't.
From my ivory tower over here of not having to intro the podcast.
See, this is exactly what I used to do with John, and I miss it so much because I just used to just jump in whenever I wanted and jab at him. And now
I
can't do that anymore.
Dude, the freedom of being the co-host is tremendous. You have nothing to say, you shut up. You have something annoying to say, you slide in.
Oh, man. I miss it so much. I hope you really enjoy it. But anyways, we are midway through the NFC.
Space.
That's it.
Continue.
Going through each division in the conference, looking at every single team, every single draft class. And now we're on the NFC South. We've done the first two NFC divisions earlier this week. We did the AFC last week. Now we're on to the NFC South. And we're going to start with a team that I think probably had the steal of the first round in the Carolina Panthers. And that would be Mr. Brian Burns going 16 overall. Ben, where did you have Brian Burns on your big board? Like how high? I think he was six for me. Brian Burns ended up being number six for me. So he's number four for you. Yeah. So obviously massive value, because here's the thing. We might be able to, like, later in the draft, I think that we could, you know, like you'll be able, like, for example, like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right? I don't know where he was ranked for you. He was probably somewhere in like the 30s for me or whatever.
15.
And so, you know, getting him at 105 or whatever the Saints got him at, that's obviously a massive like gain when it comes to like, oh, the value is kind of off the chart. But in the first round, like realistically, getting Brian Burns at 16 has to feel like one of the biggest wins in the entire draft, does it not?
Well, I mean, for us, yeah. Like, I don't think NFL teams were as high as a lot of us at TDN.
And that was kind of the way that it was the whole season, right?
Yeah, right. It was always just like, oh, well, he's undersized, and we're not positive that he's going to be able to stick up against the run, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and obviously I agree with you on all those accounts. He was my fourth overall player. But this is, I think, where we expected him to go in the teens. And I'm very happy to see him go to Carolina, because Carolina was a team that was tied to offensive tackles and to wide receivers early. And to me, I looked at the team, and Mario Addison doesn't get his due. Like, this is a guy who regularly is hitting 8-9 sacks a season, and those are good numbers. Those are strong numbers, and he doesn't really get recognition for that. But they had nobody pitching opposite him, even like, you know, in the twilight of Julius Peppers' long and very successful career, he wasn't too much of a threat on the outside. And then obviously when Peppers is gone, you really had nobody. And so they desperately needed, in my opinion, the edge help. And I'm glad they went early to edge. Obviously they do address offensive tackle a little bit later with Greg Little with a trade up, which not my favorite, but Brian Burns, I think, is huge for them in terms of Addison is a bit more of a size power rusher. Burns gives you the opposite in terms of the first step explosiveness, the bend, and the quickness around the edge. And then they came back to edge in the fourth round with Christian Miller out of Alabama. And I love what Christian Miller can do if he's healthy. And he wins in the same mold as Burns wins, with first step explosiveness and with flexibility up the arc. He's a great high side rusher with tremendous reduction of his surface area. It's a special, special skill. And so what they did at edge gets me super stoked.
Yeah.
Everything else, well, no. But the two of my favorite players at a very important position that I really felt like they needed to address. So I'm going to focus on the highlights there. Be excited about the Panthers for that reason. The rest of the draft, I can't
really
get.
Did you write up the Panthers? I can't remember.
I did not.
So, like, what grade would you give the Panthers?
Yeah, so I have all my grades in front of me. The Panthers would have gotten a B from me, a flat B. And to me, that's an average grade, or slightly above average grade, excuse me, for a slightly above average draft in terms of the picks that graded out positively for me were Brian Burns, Will Greer, Christian Miller, and Dennis Daly. Those are the picks that graded out positively. Greer by a little bit, Burns by a fair amount, especially for the first round, Miller by a lot, and Daly by a lot. Now, Daly's not going to be starting for them because Greg Little was the higher pick. Little's going to be starting for them. So it's not like Daly's going to give them much in terms of year one, but he is a really nice developmental tackle that
Did you have Daly ranked above Little?
I did not, because Little's what also developed.
What a coward.
You didn't either.
What an absolute coward.
I'm sorry. Okay, so we have two developmental guys, and Little has, I think, better current tape and better on-field athleticism. I don't think either tested super well. Can't really think of Daly's testing right now, but obviously Little tested very poorly. Listen, I wouldn't have taken Little in round two, but by round six, I'm willing to take a guy like Dennis Daly, so I like that pick better. But yeah, this is a flat B draft for me.
The NFL.com has Greg Little's name in the draft tracker as Gregory Little, and that reminded me that in yesterday's podcast, we were very confused that Riley Ridley's name was Kaven on the NFL draft tracker, and we were like, yo, what's this? They got it wrong. It's like they put in Calvin but forgot the L, LOL, they're stupid. Apparently, we're stupid.
Colossal morons.
Colossal morons, because I guess that is Riley Ridley's name, and Riley is actually his middle name.
You named your son Calvin, and then his younger brother, Kaven.
Kaven?
I hope it's Kaven, because if it's pronounced the same as Calvin is, I think that would have caused a lot of hectic problems when you were
It doesn't sound like a good strat to begin with.
Is strat how the cool kids say strategy?
Yeah, real pro strats, dude.
Oh, is this all right? It's something I'll have to integrate into the lexicon.
Speaking of real pro strats,
the kids know I'm cool.
The New Orleans Saints
strat
did not have a first round pick and still somehow ended up with Eric McCoy and Chauncey
Big
Gardner.
W.
How at God? How did we
this was
did this? What
top five draft for me, man?
This is the reward that the Saints get to reap for spending two first round picks on Marcus Davenport.
Yep.
Meanwhile, my team can't even draft more than two defensive ends in 6 years.
Oh, dude. Sorry to hear about Jason Pierre-Paul, man. That's really
hard.
Hey,
we're going to get to that. Don't worry about it. We're going to get to that this very episode, okay?
All right.
So they end up getting Eric McCoy at 48. The Saints do. And really important for them with Max Unger retiring. So
they trade up to go get him, too.
I mean, like, McCoy is such a plug-and-play dude right at that center position. And I wrote up the Saints draft recap for thedraftnetwork.com. You guys should go check it out. And in it, I talk about how this Saints roster, I mean, this is clearly a roster that can make a deep playoff run already. And one of the areas that they really had to kind of scramble to make do with was at center. And they end up getting Eric McCoy, who was a top 25, maybe a top 20 player for me, at 48. And I just like, holy cow, what a home run pick for them, not only for need, but also with BPA. Like, I thought the McCoy pick was an absolute home run. And then obviously Chauncey Garner-Johnson after that, getting him in the fourth round. It's pretty unbelievable that he lasts all the way to the fourth round. And the Saints get him. And I note this in my write-up with the Saints as well. When you don't have a first round pick, we talked about this when we talked about the Cowboys in the NFC East podcast. When you don't have a first round pick, I think it is very important for you to take at least one or two risks there in those middle rounds, or potentially at that very first pick that you have in likely the second round, to get somewhat of a potential first round impact of a player. They did that with Chauncey Garner-Johnson in the fourth round. Like, I love that pick for the Saints because they look at him and they go, hey, maybe this guy's got a little bit of an attitude issue, but
I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
We've got some swagger on our secondary and we're picking this guy because you're trying to make up for the fact that you don't have a first round pick without doing something stupid, like, you know, wasting capital next year or doing whatever, going farther deep into the hole, taking your future assets and kind of spending them this way. You're instead taking the risk and trying to make up for it in the type of player that you pick. And that's the strategy that I really like for teams that don't have first round picks for varying different reasons. And that's why I really like the Chauncey Garner-Johnson pick for the Saints.
Yeah, so like I said, the Saints were one of my top five draft classes, which they did it with very...
They get an A minus for you or what?
Yeah, so they got an A for me if they're in the top five. Now, the obviously you have a very low amount of picks, and so it's difficult to play well. But I and everybody who follows me will know I'm as big a proponent as the trade down as you'll find. To me, it's just better to make as many picks as possible. The draft is a very inexact science. There's a ton of reasons that players can bust or not be what you thought they were going to be. So just make a lot of picks. That's the way to go. But I will advocate a trade up when you have, you know, one, two pieces missing from really completing your roster. Like the Saints were, as famously, a play away from competing in the Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a team who, when you look at this roster, you know, offensive weapons, hard to find a weakness. You know, defensive line, hard to find a weakness. Defense, I would say the linebackers, tough to find a weakness with the way that Dennis Allen deploys the team. I think you can get better players there, but you don't really have to, right? When you go into the draft and you're looking at team needs, it's, yeah, interior offensive line, potentially question mark at tight end, depending on how much you believe in Jared Cook. And then if you look long term, you're saying, okay, our main expiring contract for this team is Von Bell and then potentially Sheldon Rankins, depending on the first round tenure that he could be offered. Obviously, Michael Thomas is a guy that you're going to extend. Von Bell is going to be the guy who you're worried about potentially not staying on the team. So they address starting center, Max Hunger gone with a big right. trade up. They're able to get a year one starter in the nickel. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is a very, very yep. good nickel defender.
Yep.
While addressing Von Bell potentially leaving next year. And then in the later rounds, they go for, I think, a guy who can be a quality role player tight end for you, and Alize Mack in the seventh round, who you just need him to stay healthy, which obviously that's like you were talking about making those bets on those high variance guys because you don't have a ton of picks. But like mm-hmm. McCoy, Gardner-Johnson, Alize Mack, like if you told me that was a team's first round, second round, third round pick, I'd be like, yeah, like that's fine. You know what I mean? Yep. Like it's not amazing, but it's okay. That was 2-4-7. So I mean, just like a great, great, obviously there's a ton of risk, but a great, I think, understanding of your team's weaknesses and understanding of your competing window. It's very important to understand your competing window. The Saints have limited years of Drew Brees left. He's beat back Father Time for quite a few years now, but it's going to end at some point. So invest now. They did that with the Marcus Davenport pick. Even if you don't like the player himself, the trading of multiple firsts to go get an edge when you desperately needed an edge, that's an investment now. And then the trade up for Eric McCoy. I mean, they are 2021 picks don't matter when you have Drew Brees as your quarterback. You have a couple years to win with him. Go get the players you need now. Go get rookie contributors now to win with Drew Brees. Win a Super Bowl. And then, you know, you as the general manager, you as the head coach, once you win a Super Bowl, you have a three-year grace period to rebuild because you just won a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? So sure. I love the way the Saints approach this. I agree with you. I think it was great understanding of their limited capital, their limited winning window, and what to do about their roster.
Moving on to the Atlanta Falcons. Hated it. Hated the draft.
Dude.
Sucked.
It's not good.
I mean, like,
it's bad. It's very, very bad.
Chris Lindstrom. They have the need, but drafting him at 14 I thought was super rich. I thought they could have moved down quite a bit and still got a really good interior player. I mean, especially when you look at a guy like Aaron McCoy, who just went in the second round, like 48 overall. You're telling me that he's 34 picks better than Eric McCoy? Because he's not. So I think that they could – I think the Falcons could have traded back a decent amount and still ended up with Chris Lindstrom or a interior offensive player of his caliber. The Caleb McGarry pick at 31 was an absolute reach. I don't think Kendall Sheffield's that good. John Kaminsky's not good. Quadri Olson wasn't even the best running back on his own team. Reach. And then Jordan Miller and Marcus Green. So, like,
listen,
what do I like about this draft class? I don't.
This was a team that I had to write up. And, yeah, it was like, what's your favorite day three pick? And I was like,
The fact that it was over.
Yeah, the fact that eventually it ended.
I've had I've had some fun with a couple of those, with like the worst picks and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes I don't even like pick somebody.
Oh, no. I had the Eagles, and they were like, what's your favorite day three pick? And I was like, well, it's between Sharif Miller and Clayton Thorson, so I'll take the gun. Thank you very much. Like so But this is such a Falcons draft, right? Like Lindstrom, all-around great athlete. Caleb McGarry. Excellent jumps, excellent 10-yard split. Kendall Sheffield, tremendous, like, you know, transitional quickness. I don't know if he actually ever tested because of the injury, but you know he's a great athlete. John Kaminsky, unbelievable athlete. Marcus Green, good athlete. Jordan Miller, good athlete. Like, they drafted their athletic traits at the positions that matter to them in terms of what testing they look for where, and they didn't really care about good tape. And so they've got a bunch of projects like Kendall Sheffield and John Kaminsky may make us look really dumb in 3 years if you can coach them up. But that's a huge if. A
lot and of coaching variables so, for this group.
Yeah, like that's the thing is like McGarry, Sheffield, Kaminsky, three of the best athletes that you will find at their respective positions. How much do they help you in year one? Like to me, this team's
not good, man.
McGarry?
This tape's not good.
Yeah, and so it's interesting because and this is something that's been extensively covered in terms of what McGarry was asked to do at Washington and how he was asked to take his sets and what he's capable of doing. He's going to get challenged by speed off the edge, on the outside track, on the high side, where you win, so much more than he was at the Pac-12 level. The Pac-12 does not have speed seven technique rushers. They don't have them. It's not used in the conference. And so, I mean, you watch his film against Auburn, and he's getting attacked by rushers in a way he has never seen before. And the amount of time it's going to take for him to become accustomed to big, deep 45-degree sets, big, deep vertical sets, I mean, it could be so long that he's not going to be able to recover from getting beaten like a drum initially. There's so much I like about McGarry's film, but the one big issue to me is the cardinal issue for a tackle. Can he get deep enough in his sets and retain his angles against speed rushers on the outside? Because if you can't, you're not going to win in the NFL. So there's a lot to like about him ancillary, but that one big thing, the number one trait you look for, is just a huge question mark right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the Falcons' MO, though. They draft a lot of athletes.
Exactly.
This is what they do. I think you were very right when you said that this is a Falcons draft. This is something that they do. But I mean, there's not a lot of tape to like in the guys that the Falcons pick. So yeah, it's a big coaching variable. You're really hoping that your guys can coach them up and make the most out of them.
You want to talk about Tampa? Do you want to keep talking about the other three teams?
No, that's it for the podcast.
Is it time? All
right, see you guys. No, it's a good time. So until then, you keep it locked right here. So the Buccaneers ended up picking Devin White at number 5. People have been mocking Devin White to the Buccaneers basically since January. And when they got rid of Quan Alexander, they didn't get rid of him. They just didn't want to pay him as much as the 49ers did. And then when we got the update that Kendall Beckwith, the update that there was no update on his ankle, and you're basically, you know, staring down the barrel of, hey, this guy might not play football again. Then all of a sudden you look at a linebacker group and you look at a Todd Bowles defense who he's coming in. Attacking linebackers are very integral into what they do. It's really a focal point in everything that they're doing. And beyond Lavonte David, they straight up just do not have linebackers. They really had nobody. And Lavonte David's been hurt a lot over the last couple of years. And so if Lavonte David goes down, I mean, they're starting Dion Buchanan, Devontae Bond, Riley Bulla before they cut him, you know, like Kevin Minter, these dudes that cannot make a true difference on a drive by drive basis the way that you need a defense too. So this was an obvious pick. They overlooked players like Ed Oliver, like Josh Allen, other defensive pieces that they could have used for right. Devin White. But I was telling people before the draft, they were saying, oh, well, you can't pick Devin White over Josh Allen, right? And I'm like, dude, they would 100% pick Devin White over Josh Allen. And guess what? They did. The rest of the draft, it was kind of like, I like Sean Bunting. I do. I think that Sean Bunting will be nice for him. But then like Jamil Dean, he's got all the injury history that it isn't really great. Mike Edwards, I don't love. Anthony Nelson, everybody kind of knows my opinions on Anthony Nelson, which is really funny now because Jason Pierre-Paul is not going to play until like at least October or November. So Anthony Nelson's basically going to start. And I can't wait till he starts his first game in week 1 and comes up with a sack, and how my mentions will just be gloriously
I'll be the
flooded.
First one in there, buddy. I'll be there for you.
Oh,
just in
man.
Case you missed it, I'll be there to let you know.
It's going to be a glorious day. And then they end up picking a kicker in the 5th round, which brings me to my favorite stat for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that is over the past 6 years, they have drafted just as many kickers have defensive ends.
No, Trevor, that's not good, Trevor.
Scotty Miller, who everybody just assumes is going to be the next Adam Humphries because he's a small white guy, but Brad Kelly says he's not very good. And then Terry Beckner, who is – I think Terry Beckner's fine. I mean, he's a seventh-round pick. What does it matter?
I'm sweating.
The problem with this draft class is now that Jason Pierre-Paul is hurt, and they are counting on – now, don't get me wrong. I think the Bucks had – secondary needs that they had to address, but they went linebacker, corner,
and the edge pick was Noah Spence. Oh man.
And the edge pick was Anthony Nelson.
No, but the first one was Noah Spence.
Oh right, and then the other one was
okay, I'm focused, I'm in, I'm ready, here we go. Talking Tampa.
I hate this stupid job. So it's just a really weird predicament the Bucks are in now without Jason Pierre-Paul, because their edge rushers are Shaq Barrett, who, like, you could like Shaq Barrett, as do I do, as an addition. Right. But I didn't expect Shaq Barrett to be, like, you know, like the season's on his shoulders now.
All 73 snaps per game, primary rusher, Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, and so, like, it's just it's a weird predicament to be in when you don't have a primary edge rusher anymore, especially when you could have potentially picked Josh Allen. But, again, the Bucs were in a we talked about this before the draft, and I think we did talk about it a little bit when Tampa was on the clock, and even before when we were talking about what Tampa might do. The goal of the draft – and so, sorry. The goal of free agency is to not pigeonhole yourself going into the draft. You never want to be picking high in the draft thinking, okay, we have to pick this position because we didn't fill the need the way that we needed to in free agency. That was the Buccaneers this year. Now, granted, they did not have a lot of money to work with. They were not able to move on from Gerald McCoy. They had to bring back Donovan Smith because there's just no, I mean, like, they had no other offensive tackle that they could have possibly played there. So even if you don't love Donovan Smith's outlook, you had to pay him money because you have to play somebody there at that left tackle spot. So they had to do that. They couldn't bring Quan Alexander back. They didn't have the money to basically give anybody other than a one-year deal. So here they are sitting at number five with a really great edge rusher, Josh Allen, and a really great three-tech penetrator on the board in Ed Oliver. And you have to pass both of them up. They had to pass both of them up to pick Devin White. There was no other option. They had to pick Devin White at five. And that is what you never want to do. And the Bucks put themselves in that hole. Now, I think Devin White's going to be a fine football player. I think he's going to be a really, really good football player, actually. But you could just see in this draft so many different areas in which the Bucks were forced to pick these players. And it never comes out the way that you want to, I think, when the draft starts like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I can't provide nearly the perspective, obviously, that you can. That being said, there are pieces of this draft I like. This is a Sean Bunting fan account, though 39 is a little early for him. This is a Mike Edwards fan account, 99 is a good spot. This is an Anthony Nelson fan account. I think 107 is good value for Anthony Nelson. We obviously see him quite differently. But trust in the tape, which I know you don't like, but it doesn't matter. This is also a Matt Gay fan account, but not really, you know, drafting the guy. The Bucks investment in defense, I think, is a very good thing. I think that if there's going to be success on offense with Jameis, he has the weapons in place to make that happen. I thought also he had the offensive coordinator last year that could have made it happen as well. Obviously, Todd Monken is gone now, replaced with Byron Leftwich. It's a bit of a different system that they're going to be looking at, but it's still a lot of downfield stuff. And so I think that you're going to be able to see some of Jameis's strengths go there, though obviously they've really got to figure out what he's going to be long-term and if he's worth that second contract. I'm not a Devin White fan, and I don't. I think they lost Quan to get bigger Quan. That's kind of the way I've been framing it. And so that, like, you know, to me, like, you know, you say you box yourself into need, and I totally get that. If, as long as you have Devin White ranked high at the level which you have Josh Allen and Ed Oliver, then fine, it's what you did. But if you went reaching beyond Allen and Oliver to go get White, I mean, you're going to look back in 3 years and wonder what the heck you were thinking. I mean, because White, I think, is a much, much, much lower floor than what you get from Allen or Oliver, especially Oliver. And so it's tough for me to abide by that.
All right. Well, we heard the ambulance in the background. They're going to get the Bucks draft class. So.
Fire truck, actually, is a fire station. I used to live directly across the street from it, which was really fun for podcasts. Now I live several blocks down the road, but anytime they head east, they swing on by. Sometimes it means it's time for me to drop a hot take, but my only hot take to respond to the fire sirens would be you should draft more edge rushers than kickers over a 6-year sample.
What grade did you give the Buccaneers draft?
The Buccaneers have from me a B minus.
Okay. I mean,
they didn't get a value pick. They didn't get a value pick until the fourth round with Anthony Nelson.
I think the first two guys that they picked are going to be difference makers for them. And potentially, obviously, Matt Gay could be as well as the kicker, which they've needed to solve for a while. But it was a weird way that they navigated the draft.
Yeah, they need they really, really need Sean Bunting to be more pro-ready than he seemed. Because that he's going to be thrust into a starting role for sure. Jamel Dean, man, that's a wasted pick. I mean, the guy has not been able to stay healthy. Like, he has been healthy for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Which means he's due for another knee injury, given his, like, you know, young, obviously very young career. And then also, like, even when he's healthy, the tape isn't even that strong to begin with. I mean, I don't know. That one really, really just threw me for a loop.
Can't teach speed, brother. All right, there's the NFC South. We have one division left.
It's a fun one.
And it is a fun one. The NFC West, it's going to be a really fun one. So we have that, and then we are on to quote Bill Belichick. We'll be on to next week, and we've got a couple of things that we're thinking about doing next week, but whatever it is, it's going to be a lot of fun. So stick around. We're finishing up the NFC West tomorrow. And until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.